This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's Entertainment Technology World. We're about to speak to Adam Iskrew, who is the executive director of P2P United. Welcome to Utopia Media's Entertainment Technology World.
Thanks very much, Mark. I appreciate the invitation.
Why don't we just talk for a second about your day job? You work for Flanagan Consulting, LLC.
Yes, indeed. I'm a lobbyist. Let's put that right on the record. Flanagan Consulting, headed by former Congressman Mike Flanagan, is a small consulting firm, lobbying consulting firm in Washington, D.C.
And what kind of issues do you
We cover a range of things. Appropriations issues, defense issues, homeland security, my own practice, as the work with P2P United might have already suggested, deals substantially with copyright and e-commerce issues. I represent a major financial services institution as well. Oftentimes, as your listeners may know, in Washington, it's your kind of generalized background and who you've run into over the years that defines what you do more than a specific area of academic expertise, and somehow I was lucky or unlucky enough to develop some expertise in the copyright field and do some work on Capitol Hill and otherwise that built on that a little bit.
Okay, tell us what P2P United is, how it got started, how you got associated with it,
sure,
and what it does.
Happy to do it. And in essence, the occasion for this interview is a great illustration of why P2P United got started. To jump straight to that, the answer is to combat entertainment industry propaganda, and I realize that's a strong word, about peer-to-peer technology and the companies who produce the software that allows individuals to communicate with each other.
Okay, let's focus on that then. There are really two main charges made by the motion picture and the mm-hmm. recording industry about that. One is that using peer-to-peer opens up users to all kinds of viruses, spyware, and other kinds of malware, and the other one is that it's a machine for infringement.
Sure.
Why don't you address those two issues, starting with the malware issue?
Absolutely. The issue of malware is actually, you know, one that covers a lot of ground, and it's very easy for propagandists. You'll find this in Propaganda 101 if you go to your local bookstore, or I don't know if any colleges teach the class, but
I think it's called communication.
I think it is, but what you want to do is fuzz things up. So malware, of course, you know, everybody in favor of malware, raise your hand. No hands go up. And what does that include? Well, it includes spyware. Well, what's spyware? Well, it's kind of fuzzy as well. Our view of spyware, and we are fully in support of federal legislation to crack down on this. We do not, we being the companies in my association, BearShare, Blubster, eDonkey, Grokster, and Morpheus, rather popular programs, do not have spyware. That's stuff that you don't know is there, you haven't consented to, and which essentially sneaks up on you and grabs hold of stuff in your computer and may very well report it to somebody else so they can use that information, sometimes even to hijack your computer. You know, keystroke loggers, things like that.
So you and your members are adamantly foursquare against spyware.
Adamantly opposed.
And you don't use
it. Don't use it. Never have, never will.
Okay.
We established a code of conduct when we started, as you asked about earlier, back in July of 2003. You know, it didn't take very long for that ink to dry, and nobody was using it at the time. So, you know, we have to, you know, for precision's sake, but also because it really matters when you try to discuss these issues intelligently, it really helps to get, you know, what you're talking about straight. Now, viruses, of course, are also malware, and nobody in their right mind who has a product to present to the consumer invents viruses to put in the product. That's not what the motion picture people, you know, attempt to castigate us for. They say that our product facilitates the delivery of viruses from the outside world to a user's computer through our software.
Okay, address that issue then.
Well, email does the same thing. We all hate it, but the fact is I get hundreds and hundreds of emails a day. If I'm not real careful and my own filters and my own virus program isn't doing its job, there's going to be one or two that get through. Now, peer-to-peer software is a neutral, and don't take my word for it, the courts have described it this way, is a neutral communications tool. So it allows you and me, along with a larger community of other people using the software, to share all kinds of information. The entertainment industry would like you to think that we designed it to be music-specific or video-specific or something else specific. It ain't. It's a generic communications tool. You could send me a recipe. You could send me a picture of your grandchild. You could send me a picture of your dog. You could send me this audio file of the report that you've been kind enough to include me in. So, again, the motion picture...
And in fact, they can also be used... It was interesting because I was talking to a spokesperson for the MPAA earlier mm-hmm. today, and we were talking about this, and she said it's not just term papers that are being transferred over P2P, implying, it seemed to me, that it's okay to transfer term papers.
Maybe the people in the MPAA, got through school their way, and I got through mine. I'll leave that to them.
There is no association that has an interest, apparently, in protecting the intellectual property rights of people who write
term
papers.
Authors, yes, I think they probably should.
Maybe
most people
there.
Know as soon as you write something down under current law, you have a copyright in it. The fact nobody may want to pay you for it is another matter. But the point to illustrate here, Mark, is that it's clearly in the interest of major entertainment industries, and the recording industry, of course, is right there, with the movie industry making exactly the same kind of scurrilous, broad, ill-defined, propagandistic charges. It's very much in their interest to cast aspersions on this entire technology. When they finally get caught, seeming to be anti-technologists, they then change their tune and say, oh, no, we love the technology, we want to use the technology, we're just against the bad actors. Well, those supposedly would be my clients, but what exactly is the bad action, the engine for infringement argument that you mentioned? What makes us bad actors? That we both invented, refined, and make available to the public that neutral communications tool.
Before we get to the infringement discussion, talk as much as you are knowledgeable about, or beyond if you want, about the technology aspect of the question, whether peer-to-peer networks can be used, as you've said, email can, to spread viruses. Obviously, the intention of the manufacturers of the software is not to do that.
Absolutely, but
whether malefactors who have written viruses or are using other people's viruses and want to spread them can essentially attach them to peer-to-peer transferred files and thereby use the leverage of that technology to spread those viruses far and wide.
There's no question. I don't want to dodge that in any way. There's no question that is accurate. But we have to stop and pause for a second. That means that the technology, this neutral technology that can be used to share any and all kinds of information. Think of the telephone. Think of email. Think of the next great invention that we don't know about yet. Okay. All of those technologies were victims of their success. When I was a kid, it was crank or obscene phone calls were a big problem. The phone was the most efficient way of facilitating communication of this kind. Then along came the internet, and emails became the delivery mechanism of choice for nefarious individuals. The software is not nefarious. The people that produce it aren't nefarious. Anytime you've got something powerful that can do good and can do ill, unfortunately, the bad guys are going to embrace it too. Now, interestingly enough, rather than do something for the public to help educate them about you ought to have antivirus software, you ought to have a firewall on your computer, you need to use whatever kind of parental control mechanisms a given program might have in it, you need to occasionally look at your computer. Motion picture industry, to my knowledge, has not done any of that kind of stuff. My organization, by contrast, spent a year working with the FTC to produce a series of consumer advisories.
Okay, we're going to talk about that. Let's just focus one more time, though, on what people need to do if they want to protect themselves from viruses transferred on peer-to-peer networks.
The answer is simple, because it's generic. There is no distinction to be made between peer-to-peer software as a way that yucky stuff may get on your computer, and email or any other kind of mass communications tool. So what that means, generically, is if you're not running good, commercially available antivirus software, and I will leave it to the CNETs and other consumer-oriented sites of the world to tell people what they think the best programs are, that's beyond my level of competence, but if you don't have a quote-unquote quality antivirus software on your computer, turn your computer off now and go get one.
Okay. All right. Let's now talk about the new cyber safety initiative that you've just announced and what your relationship with the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, is, and what you're telling people about that now.
Yep, absolutely, and I appreciate that opportunity. The bottom line is that we started working on these issues on our own as best we could to provide consumers and users of the software with advice about a whole range of issues, really from the beginning of the organization. as this industry got going, as consumers' embrace of peer-to-peer technology exploded, members of Congress expressed concern that consumers might unwittingly start using peer-to-peer and not fully appreciate some of the kinds of activities by these nefarious individuals out there that we've just been talking about. Now, do we in P2P United believe that it's our sole responsibility to educate the public about these kinds of risks, and viruses is a good example of that? No, we don't think it's our sole responsibility, but the flip side is, do we think we have no responsibility? Clearly not. We actually believe that just as anybody who's dealing with the consumer needs to let them know kind of what the world is that the product is being used in, we've got a responsibility to best of our ability, say, heads up, consumer, we're really glad you love our product. Please keep using it, but use it safely. So Congress, when they get interested, oftentimes gets the Federal Trade Commission interested, which has responsibility for consumer protection. Various consumer groups contacted us directly. The FTC contacted us directly, said, we noticed you've got some consumer advisories there. We think they can be stronger. We looked at them and said, you know, we think you're right. Let's talk. It was not a hard-bitten, hard-fought negotiation. It was an entirely collaborative and collegial process. And the result, last December, actually, was when we unveiled new consumer advisories that have been in use since. We were very pleased to have some detailed text that users of our software can reach through the website, obviously p2punited.org, but perhaps more importantly, through the websites and through the software of our individual member companies. So when it says, click here for information about using P2P software safely, important information about using P2P software safely, we mean it. And what we're going to try to do in the coming months is actually at our own expense to take out some public service advertising to point people to that little click box so that they actually click through and look at some of these advisories that relate to avoiding copyright infringement, to avoiding data security problems, other kinds of issues that have been flagged by consumer advocates.
Okay, and so what would you say is the scope and dimension of this new cyber safety initiative that you're launching now?
Well, it's essentially a follow-on to our efforts that were initially unveiled in December. We regard all of this to be a work in progress, and if folks go to our website, as I hope they will, to shamelessly plug it again, it's p2punited.org, you will find the very latest of our ongoing efforts, and that is a headline from Tax Day, April 15th, kind of a painful day for most of us, where we urge people to focus on the fact that they need to save safely. And that means that when you're saving your tax return on your computer, if you've got peer-to-peer software there, that you make sure that the tax return doesn't somehow, frankly, we're not sure how it might, but that the tax return doesn't wind up inadvertently in your shared folder.
Right.
Of the literally billions and billions, probably tens of billions of P2P downloads that go on every month, they're, you know, statistically speaking, some tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of that apparently sometimes includes tax returns. And that's a bad thing. And far from running from the issue, we are actually flagging it for people and suggesting ways that they can protect themselves. So,
okay.
So the Save Safely initiative is indeed the most recent one that we've unveiled. As best as we and consumer advocates can think of others, we'll have those up in the future.
Okay. Now, I'm reading an article here about your initiative, and it says that the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, has refuted record and film industry allegations that P2P United members committed, quote, false and deceptive practices.
Yes, that was the charge. That's right. And it's false.
And what was the, do you have a link to the Federal Trade Commission's statement about this?
It actually was a letter that they wrote back to Congress, which technically is not a public, that letter is not a public document.
So we can't get a copy of it.
I will see if it's permissible for me to provide it to you, and I'll be happy to.
Okay.
But those general reports in the press are the product of discussions by reporters with folks on the Hill who are knowledgeable of it. Obviously, this is not
right.
Secret information, and it shouldn't be.
So what you're saying is that the FTC is on record in a letter that's not public information right now, saying that the claims of the record and movie industries the P2P providers have committed false and deceptive practices is not true.
Yeah, I think the best way to do this, you know, because it is a public document, would be to refer you to something that I can send you, which is testimony that was given in the last Congress, not too long ago, by the head of the Consumer Protection Bureau, since retired, of the Federal Trade Commission. And what this gentleman testified to, and that is obviously a public document, is exactly what you've just said, that the charge that we had, you know, affirmatively engaged in deceptive practices did not seem to hold up. That is what the Motion Picture Association asked their friends in Congress to get the FTC to investigate. Now, in fairness, I want to point two things out, because, you know, we play it straight. We are not propagandists and don't try to be. One, the Federal Trade Commission worked with us in an advisory capacity on producing these heads-ups for consumers, but those heads-ups are not the product of the Federal Trade Commission, and the Federal Trade Commission has not formally endorsed what P2P United is doing. So I want people, you know, I don't want people to assume that we have a good housekeeping seal of approval from the Federal Trade Commission. Their job is to let you know when you're doing something wrong and to do something about it. They said, we're not doing anything wrong, but they also said in their testimony, we think that more can be done. That's, as I said before, we agreed with them, and we've done more, and we'll keep doing more.
Okay, if you can provide me with a link to the testimony,
absolutely,
we'll provide it on our site as well.
That would be great.
I think we've addressed this issue now of malware and the FTC and so on. If you've got a few more minutes, I would like to talk about the other major charge made by the MPAA and the RIAA, that these P2P technologies are machines of infringement. Maybe we could focus a little bit first on the Grokster MGM versus Grokster case. What involvement does P2P United have, or do you want to say something generally about the importance of that case, the arguments that were made, and where things stand depending on what the justices rule?
I'm happy to do that. That's a lot, going to be a large nutshell, but I'll give it my best shot. First of all, to the overarching charge that the major so-called copyright or content industries have been leveling now, maybe they've escalated to propaganda 201 in this regard. They are once again conflating a new technology with what individuals do with that technology, and that dovetails directly with the Supreme Court case you just mentioned, MGM versus Grokster. It's actually not just MGM, it's dozens and dozens of entertainment industry companies against Grokster and the company that produces Morpheus, a company called Streamcast.
Right.
The central defining feature of that lawsuit is exactly the same central defining feature that the Supreme Court dealt with 20 years ago when the Motion Picture Association, and people will think I'm making this up, I swear to you I am not, when the Motion Picture Association, in its infinite wisdom, major studios went to the Supreme Court all the way there and said, Supreme Court, you have to hold Sony liable as what's called a secondary copyright infringer. What was Sony's crime? Developing and marketing the VCR.
And as we know, it turned out that the VCR and its follow-on, the DVD,
absolutely,
has been where the movie industry and has made plenty of money since.
Untold billions, and in fact, the longtime, now retired head of the MPAA, Jack Valenti, eventually wound up testifying on Capitol Hill that he'd made a mistake when he said in other testimony that the VCR was to the movie industry what the Boston Strangler was to the woman Home Alone. It got to that level of propaganda and hyperbole. And, of course, they are thrilled these days that they were wrong.
Let me ask two questions regarding that, though. Has the copyright industry, MPAA, RIAA, have they reacted to this argument formally or informally that you've made that when the beta recorders were there, they were against them? It turned out to be in their best interest. Have they responded? Have any of them responded on any level
to that
argument?
There's been lots of briefs filed, and now as of just the end of last month, there were arguments made in the Supreme Court itself, quite a month ago. And, you know, their basic take is, best as I can do it justice. That was then, this is now.
Right.
The technologies are different, and indeed they are.
Right.
But the really key thing about this case and the really key thing potentially about the decision we're expecting, you know, as early as June or probably July, is that the central tenet of the Sony decision namely that if you produce a product or a device that has what they call substantial non-infringing uses,
right?
Okay, then the person who produces it and markets it is not going to be liable just for producing and marketing it.
Okay, let's try to
and,
get
and
to
that okay. case has been referred to by, you know, again, don't take my word for it.
Right.
It's been referred to by many people, but Gary Shapiro among them, the head of the Consumer Electronics Association of America, as literally the Magna Carta of the American consumer electronics industry. And that's why not only did Grokster, of course, file a brief on its own behalf with Streamcast in this case, but 20 briefs or more were filed in support of their side of things by the likes of the National Venture Capital Association, by Intel, by all kinds of people who were concerned about the ability of people to communicate, the ACLU and the American Conservative Union, each filed a brief on our side of the case, and by all of these important business interests. Because peer-to-peer, much as Hollywood and the recording industry would like policymakers to think that it's just about the entertainment biz, that it's only about this impact that individuals using peer-to-peer may be having on those industries, it's not about entertainment at all. The material, the software, the peer-to-peer applications are all entirely content neutral.
Okay, two questions on that subject of content neutrality.
Sure.
To what extent do you acknowledge, or what do you acknowledge the extent is, of the infringing and non-infringing distribution
right.
of uses of these technologies in practice? And before you even answer that,
mm-hmm.
does that matter if there
exactly.
if there are if even one non-infringing P2P transfer takes place, or even if just the potential for that transfer takes
right.
place, and if 100% of the transfers were infringing, would that affect your argument? And again, as I said at the beginning, what do you think the distribution is between infringing and non-infringing uses?
Let me come to that question second, if you don't mind.
Okay.
And I think you've set this up in exactly the right way. The good news here is, you know, we really don't have to dance on the head of a pin about the extremes of theoretical circumstances. However, it is critical, and again, these are the arguments made by the Intels of the world, by the major business interests who filed on the same side of the case as our members. If a device has substantial non-infringing uses, that's the test.
That's a term of art.
That's a term of art, but substantial non-infringing is, and in fact the Supreme Court in the Sony case importantly said capable of substantial non-infringing uses.
Okay.
And the reason that they did that, and the reason that maintaining vitality to that concept is so important to those industries, as they've explained themselves, is that when a product is on a drawing board, when people are going out for first rounds of venture funding, when people are trying to invent and drive our economy forward, and that's what the technology industries have done, they need relative certainty that, think of the little guy in the garage or even the small company that's got a mere, you know, $2 or $3 million in funding. They can be sued out of existence on a potential copyright infringement liability case before their device even gets anywhere near consumer shelves. So, you know, who knows if an iPod, you know, if it were subject to a test different from substantial non-infringing uses, capable of substantial non-infringing uses, would ever have made it off the drawing board if a general counsel of some venture capital company said, you know, you got a problem here under this new test, the kind of new test that the motion picture industry was arguing in front of the Supreme Court, you know, ought to be used instead, looking at some type of percentage, some type of relative comparison of usage.
Could we diverge here for just a second?
Of course.
Why hasn't the iPod been subject of attacks by the copyright industry?
I think the recording industry likes making money from the paid download of music that Steve Jobs has generated for.
So meaning if there's a technology that can be used for infringing or non-infringing uses, and if it's structured so that it, because in fact the iPod only works with iTunes, doesn't it?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. It is certainly possible to store on your iPod, you know, perhaps with the use of outside software, any kind of information at all. So if you view the iPod, and Fred von Lohmann of the Electronic Frontier Foundation has been very eloquent on this point, for example. Fred successfully argued the case on behalf of Grokster in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. It's the Motion Picture Association and friends who are appealing a loss in the Ninth Circuit to the Supreme Court.
Right.
Fred rather eloquently said, you know, look, when you break it down, the iPod is a very consumer attractive portable hard drive.
Right.
You can put anything on that hard drive, and people do. So yes,
and so you're saying that, but it's not the target that Morpheus is.
It certainly is not,
and that's because it's mainly not theoretically, but in practice, used only for iTunes, which people have to pay for, and then some of the money goes back to the copyright holders.
That's the claim is that that's what it's used for,
right.
And again, under a capable of substantial non-infringing uses test, it easily passes. And even if you did some type of percentage analysis of how is it likely to be used, you know, the iPod would probably be okay given the popularity of iTunes. But let's talk for a minute about that percentage assessment.
Right.
And let's talk about it in two ways. First, in the broad strokes, Justice Scalia immediately zoomed in on the right question when the Motion Picture Association's lawyer at the Supreme Court was trying to sell him some type of proportionality test
right.
that we've been talking about. And Justice Scalia said, wait a minute. You know, when do you do this measurement? And how do you do this measurement? And, you know, how much time do you give him? Do you give him an hour? Do you give him a week? Do you give him a month? Do you give him a year? You know, what are the factors? If the whole point is having some kind of certainty up front, which is what, again, economic interests on our side of the case clearly suggested was their concern. If that's the primary concern, how in the world do you draw these lines? And then to get finally, down to the real trenches here, which is, what's really going on out there?
Right.
The motion picture people were arguing to the Supreme Court based on a single footnote in a brief previously filed in the case that somehow the overwhelming majority of uses of peer-to-peer were allegedly to infringe copyrights.
Well, what does P2P United say? What's your best, either your personally best estimate?
The honest answer, and this is the right answer at this point, is going to your question earlier. A, it shouldn't matter because it's the substantial non-infringing use test that really needs to be preserved.
Right.
Again, don't take my word for that. Ask Gary Shapiro and friends.
Right.
But secondly, if in fact we're going to have some type of serious discussion. As a matter of policy of where we ought to set lines dealing with numbers, the honest answer somebody would have to give you, and you won't get this answer from the movie industry, is we don't know. The single footnote that they can refer to was one study 4 years ago of 1,600 songs, not 1,600 downloads overall,
right.
So that's polluted immediately,
right.
1,600 songs about which they felt that they could make assessments of 75% and had a guess, literally guess, about 15% more. So, to say that the methodology of that study was wrong or flawed is to dignify it in a very significant way.
Okay, realizing that capable of substantial non-infringing uses is the test and not
right.
what's actually happening, could you list a number of substantial non-infringing uses
that are being
used now?
No question. Both presidential campaigns in the 2004 election
right.
got their message out using peer-to-peer. The U.S. Army uses peer-to-peer distribution to get very popular recruiting game software out there, and recruiting these days is particularly essential for the Army. In the commercial context, revenues are realized, substantial revenues by the companies I represent, by distributing, with the full permission of the game software owner, new games that are sold to consumers. So there's actual commerce, going on out there as well. The Berklee School of Music, if you people put in P2P and Berklee, Berklee, into a search engine, you will find that for a long time they've had substantial amounts of curricular material up there. The Internet Archive utilizes peer-to-peer. The gentleman who distributes the most popular Unix operating system called Lindows uses P2P distribution in a closed loop because of its efficiency.
Okay, you've named a few.
The list goes on and on.
Now, in other Utopia Media websites, we've been talking about cellular video. Or cell casting, and the use of phone cameras,
sure.
to generate video, and the explosion of the number of points that can be generating audio and video content. Presumably,
will never go back in the bottle.
Presumably, there's a synergy between peer-to-peer networks and remote video generation and distribution as well, isn't there?
There certainly is, and that could well grow, but again, it's a great place to end because it gets us back to where we started. That probability, if not present actuality, is a function of the efficiency of this technology. That's the sort of any technology runs into these kinds of difficulties while education is catching up with the marketplace, while familiarity is catching up with the marketplace, it becomes a victim of its success. The more powerful and efficient, and with those efficiencies come cost savings and positive effects for the economy, the more efficient a technology is, the more it's going to be embraced, and that means embraced, you know, for good and for ill, until social behavioral norms catch up with it.
Okay,
and that's what we're struggling to do now.
Okay, now we've talked about MGM versus Grokster. If you have a few more minutes, I would like to talk about the spate of lawsuits being brought by MPAA and RIAA.
Literally 2 or 3 minutes would be great. What I can say is this, and I've said this before, so my apologies to your listeners who may have heard it previously. The Recording Industry Association, and to the extent the movie people follow suit, are within their rights to sue people that they feel are infringing their copyrights. However, just because they're within their rights doesn't mean they're not wrong to do it in a larger sense. Their stated goal in that process is to educate people. I would argue with respect that there are much more benign and therefore much more effective ways to educate people than suing 10,000 of them and collecting what to date has been an average of about $3,000 per settlement.
Let me try to get your position and or that of P2P yep. United on that question, though. You argue that it's appropriate to allow peer-to-peer networks to exist and to function because they're not responsible for the infringement. It's individual perpetrators who are responsible for the infringement. Is that a fair restatement of your argument?
It is, but I need to drop a footnote to it that's
okay.
important because, it's,
right.
again, these words matter.
Right.
Your use of the word networks is telling. It's not unusual by any means, so I don't mean to pick
right.
on you, Mark.
Right.
The content industries consistently refer to us as services and networks.
Right.
We are vendors. After somebody buys the software from us or downloads a free version,
right.
there is no ongoing relationship. We have no affiliates. We have no central computer servers. We have simply provided an individual with a product. It's as if we sold you a megaphone that you're using to communicate with others, and others have the same megaphone and can use it to communicate back with you. We don't moderate the megaphones. We don't have any continuing ongoing relationship.
Okay, so but it's your position that that to the extent that the copyright owners want to enforce their copyrights, their complaint is with the infringers, not with the vendors of the software that the infringers use, right?
Yeah, we make 2 points, and that is exactly one of them. But it is not our position at P2P United that these lawsuits are a good idea.
Or
that in the larger sense that they're really fair or likely to be effective.
Okay.
We think that if these entertainment industries, who claim to be speaking for the artist, you know, we want to get revenues for the artist is being shortchanged,
right?
If they're really serious about having these billions and billions and billions of downloads, which are now not compensated transactions,
right?
If they're really serious about finding a way to generate revenues off all of those downloads, then we need to be in a room productively discussing the kind of legal architecture and commercial architecture we need to turn those downloads into quarters and dollars and dimes.
Okay,
We have those kinds of systems in the law. They're cumbersome. They're called collective or sometimes compulsory licenses.
Right.
But those discussions have thus far been anathema to the industries because, sing it with me, they probably wouldn't make quite as much money under those sorts of systems. Individual artists who are now not realizing any revenue might do very, very well indeed.
P2P United is advocating those negotiations with the copyright industry?
We have from the outset, from our inception in July of 2003, we will continue to try to sing about that from the rooftops, but unless and until these industries tell their friends in Congress that they're at least willing to entertain a discussion, or conversely, a member of Congress says it's completely ludicrous that this subject is somehow verboten, then we're not going to get anywhere.
Okay, the focus has been in these lawsuits on use of the Internet 2, which allows for these processes to take place.
The most recent wave.
The
yes,
most
that's
recent
right.
wave, because it drastically reduces the time it takes to transfer. Are your member products present and usable over that network without any modification? If people have downloaded the software, Morpheus... and they're using the regular internet. If they get a connection through their university or elsewhere to the to Internet 2, are they able to use that peer-to-peer software, but at drastically increased speeds?
That's a good question. I would need to double check that absolutely. Offhand, I would not see any reason why it could not be, why our software, like any other software made to be used with standard computers,
Works better. The software functions the same, but the transfers can take place.
It's a matter of, as the phrase goes, the size of the pipe.
As
getting broadband would improve your functionality, relative to your dial-up connection.
Right.
This would appear to be broadband on steroids.
Okay. Before we wrap up, do you expect that the Supreme Court is going to come down completely on the side of peer-to-peer or completely on the side of the copyright owners, or do you think they're going to pass it back to the Ninth Circuit, what do you see as the most likely decision that's going to come out of there?
I hate to sound wishy-washy on you, Mark. It's very difficult to tell from any Supreme Court argument which way the justices are leaning. As your listeners may know, they may seem to be emphatic about something, but their reasons for being emphatic might be to just essentially be playing devil's advocate
right.
to tease out the opposite position of where they're coming down.
So you don't really have any expectations?
I would have to say that there are nuances about the facts and the procedural posture I won't bore you and your listeners with, but that contribute to a moderate projection I'll make, which is that it's unlikely, I think, that the Supreme Court took the case to simply, say not much. Now, the devil, of course, will be in really how far they choose to go on any of the arguments, we've just been discussing directly and indirectly here. And on that, I am going to have to be wishy-washy, and thank you for your time.
Okay, but before you thank you, I'd like you to wrap up this way. The principal transformative or even disruptive function of the Internet has been in the area of disintermediation.
Right.
It lets people work directly with each other.
Yep.
And peer-to-peer is the quintessence of that technology. How do you see the evolution, assuming there's a reasonably benign, from your point of view, decision from the Supreme Court, in the next 2 or 3 years in terms of peer-to-peer as a tool for disintermediating these content production industries so that essentially smaller scale producers of content, music, film, video, information, new technologies we don't know about, can essentially set themselves up as mini majors and start producing, distributing content and using the power of this technology to essentially transform the face of content production and distribution?
You've said it easily as well and probably better than I could have, Mark. I think that description is the not even probability. It's the virtual certainty to describe what the next 5 to 10 years may look like. Peer-to-peer technology, as I've said before, without any offense to the 5 companies I'm proud to represent, those companies could go away the day before yesterday, and nothing would change. Every known peer-to-peer software program that anybody's ever heard of could go away yesterday, and nothing about what you're suggesting would change. The fact is that this, broadly speaking, this technology is out there. It's easy for people with a modicum of programming knowledge to put a peer-to-peer program together, and what people seem to want, certainly in this country and I think increasingly worldwide, is the ability to connect, to form communities, to share all kinds of information. Now, does entertainment information that quote-unquote belongs to somebody else and should generate a royalty get swept up in that? Of course it does. But is that going to be the lens through which individual consumers and folks who are looking to make niches for themselves in all kinds of businesses, entertainment included, are going to pay attention to? I don't think so. I think, when I said before that the genie is out of the bottle, as trite as that phrase is, it's really, in this case, trite and true. We're going to have to find a way, and I'm talking to my friends, and I do have some at MPAA and the recording industry. We and they have got to find a way to stop fighting a fight that might result in a Pyrrhic victory for them, but no real solution.
Okay. Thank you very much for talking to us about all this. Don't hang up, but I'm going to turn off the recording, and I want to thank you, before I do, for talking to us today on Utopia Media's Entertainment Technology World about the fascinating world of peer-to-peer networking applications.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be with you.
Thank you.